able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lifes of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
There we go.
Time and a half with Brother Charles on WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Eastern Pennsylvania. You are listening to Time and a Half with Brother Charles. Welcome. Today's episode is brought to you by Cucumber Water, as well as Styles by Val, Cuts by Trey. If you're trying to get finesse for less, pull up to Souls 220, especially as we're trying to get fleeky and fly for homecoming weekend. This episode is entitled the Social Justice Episode. I will be discussing social justice within Lafayette's context while also discussing this obsession that a lot of people have with allyship, as well as the necessity for social justice and how misguided liberalism can also be a detriment to the actual plight of those of us who are social justice activists on college campuses and elsewhere. But before I get started, a couple announcements. This weekend in a couple days, homecoming here at Lafayette will be on and popping. Tomorrow, matter of fact, the pop-off over at Campus Pizza, hosted by none other than our own Precision Step team. $3 donations in order to get in. They will be taking cash, and you can also Venmo. I think the Venmo is the Precision Step team. But if you have any questions, hit up the captains, Natasha, Adri, all them folk. Freynette, Sister Freynette Familia. I'm doing her thing. Also on Saturday, we have at 12:30, the McDonough Network is hosting their alumni tailgate on Markle Parking Deck, courtesy of Uncle Dean Hunt. I know he'll be finessing on the grill. They got a DJ popping, free food, free music, good vibes. Talked to Brother Rob earlier. He said a lot of folk from, I think he said like 75 to 83 pulling up, and then you got like this little gap, but then you got a lot of folk from like early 2000s pulling up, and a couple folk who just graduated in the recent years. So it'll be a good time, especially for the first years, to get a taste of what it looks like when black folk who actually went here come back. I remember the first time I actually saw black graduates from Life. I was like, dang, like I'm really not some of the first people that look like me to walk this campus. So it's definitely going to be a good time. And then later that night, you already know what it is, Grown and Sexy, ABC's homecoming dance. DJ Select Jigger, Brother Jeff, graduated a couple years ago. He'll be spinning the tunes, and it's going to be a great vibe. Everybody show up and show out. Make sure y'all dress to impress. We ain't having everybody just pull up looking like anything. So do what y'all got to do. And represent. It's going to be a good time. Also, November 10th coming up, ABC definitely going to be hosting a little skate night. Details coming soon. But more importantly, Take Back the Night is in a few days. I believe it's next. I want to say October 27th, actually. Yeah. It's a 5K walk run, as well as going to be a candlelight vigil. And George Brandon is going to be talking. And it's definitely important. Take Back the Night is an initiative courtesy of Pards Against Sexual Assault here on campus, and it's very necessary. Take Back the Night is a initiative where individuals who are against sexual assault, especially on college campuses, literally take up spaces around the campus, and it occurs at nighttime because a lot of sexual assaults do actually occur at night, and a lot of survivors and allies come together and recognize and take back the space, break the silence, to combat the violence. That's kind of like the slogan. And it's definitely a dope program. They're looking for a lot of people to show up and show support, because this is a problem that a lot of people like to sweep under the rug, is sexual assault on campuses. And Lafayette is definitely one of those campuses where we might talk about it, but when it comes to actually doing something about it, that's when things kind of go to the wayside. So this is definitely an opportunity. The contact for that is Nina Cotto, if I mess up your last name. But she's definitely the contact person for that. And there's a lot of more details coming soon regarding. It's a great program. I definitely support it. I definitely will be showing love to that jump. So with that said, you're listening to Time and a Half with Brother Charles. I'm throwing on them classics today. Next up is Marvin Gaye, Inner City Blues. We're going to put y'all in the vibe. I got a lot to talk about today, so sit back, get comfortable. Once again, this is Time and a Half with Brother Charles. Keep rocking with me. Sky high.
You're looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the bass down. Scheming, now let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. But pretty Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangsta in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Inside my face is all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate poor, poor, when the killer's dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
All right, time and a half with Brother Charles. We right back. Once again, this is the social justice episode. Social justice episode. Oh, also, one last announcement. I will be doing a TED Talk for TEDx Lafayette College on November the 9th. That's when the TEDx conference will be held. So look out for that. It is about code switching as well as language. And how black people really got to have an interview voice versus their voice when they clock out of work. And the inner workings of double consciousness as well as respectability politics and what that really looks like within the black community while we maneuver white society. I was telling people on Facebook Live also, especially now, if you listen to online, I do go on live so you can actually watch what I do as I do it. That's just a little tidbit. But I was discussing how social justice has kind of really shaped my college experience simply because before I came to Lafayette, of course, I was conscious and aware of what was going on, but I never really found myself in certain spaces where my voice was truly heard and I was able to really plan and organize demonstrations and protests and things of that nature until I touched down on a college campus. Because what a lot of people don't recognize is so many initiatives, so many movements in the past have been orchestrated by college students. SNCC in the 1960s was literally the face of sit-ins, of the freedom buses, were the freedom riders. So many different initiatives within the civil rights movement were headed by college level students. People my age, like when you watch videos of people getting hosed down and a dog sit on them and people getting shakes thrown in their face or hot coffee poured on their lap at lunch counters, those were people who were literally my age. So the college campus has been the foreground for so much change in this country. And it kind of saddens me because it seems as though that type of energy and the know-how of individuals on college campuses who are literally putting their lives on the line when it comes to these demonstrations, it seems as though that's being attacked by certain people in this country right now. And it kind of saddens me because it's just interesting how past generations literally forget sometimes the makeup of how things went. Like it's only natural for past generations to critique the generation that's kind of on its way. So I don't really put that past anybody. But at the same time, we have to recognize that the college campus is literally where people are becoming their most intellectual selves. Literally, this is my job right now is to just gain knowledge. As a student, that's really what your job is. So as you do that, as you start to critique the world around you and you start to break down the walls of the way that you were raised and you start to look at the world through your own eyes, through your own scope, through your own views, you start to recognize the problems within it. And being here at Lafayette and just seeing how my blackness, my being, simply just the way that I am, was seen as a threat to everyone. It seemed like everyone around me, because I'm in such a white space. I remember touching down and literally just kind of being angry almost immediately, because it's like, how dare you be repulsed by simply my existence? And I remember last year, with everything that was going on in the country with those back-to-back killings of Alton Sterling and then Philando Castile. And to this day, I really don't understand why those two killings specifically stick out to me. But I think it was just the abruptness of having one brother killing and murder be plastered on, like, in my face. And then another one hours later. I think that was kind of like the last straw. And then coming back on campus and then returning to this space where I feel kind of caged up as a black individual. And I think a lot of us felt that way within the black community. So we did what we had to do, because we felt that the administration here at Lafayette was not really supporting us in a way that we had seen them support different communities. And Lafayette is capable of supporting a community. Lafayette is capable of showcasing that it has the support and the means and the resources to support a community when it's time. It was just very enraging for us to recognize as the black community that when it came to us, that we did not receive that support. It was always reactive instead of proactive. And we let the administration and anybody else know how we felt. We sat down during the anthem during some of the most prominent football games, such as homecoming and the Lafayette Lehigh game. For those of you who don't know, Lafayette Lehigh is the longest running football rivalry in the history, whatever. So I guess it's a big deal. So people pull up. It was this great initiative, great demonstration. I remember I was screaming at the top of my lungs during this kind of, not necessarily a sit-in, but we kind of overtook our student center's atrium. And there was a lot, I think for about 5 weeks, there was a demonstration after demonstration, protest after protest. And people were writing, the newspaper was interviewing me and there were so many different elements of, you know, like, oh, Lafayette is this buzzing place where social justice is always in your face. But after the semester was over, after the smoke had cleared, after the conversations had stopped, I had to take a step back and recognize what tangible change had been created after all these initiatives. What exactly had been accomplished by what we had done? How did I feel after doing all this and putting my mental health up? Because all those demonstrations, die-ins, a die-in is when somebody lays on the ground and literally like depicts a dead body, probably a black body. And watching people do that was one of the most detrimental experiences I've ever experienced in my life, period, right? And we did that twice as the people who participated in the initiative, right? Just recognizing how much trauma I put myself through and how certain people who did it literally did it because everybody else was doing it without really recognizing the magnitude of what it really meant to protest something, without really recognizing who they were doing it for and the real reason why. It's just interesting because I know we live in this space where so much goes on that really needs a response that it's hard for people to really continue to pay attention to an issue, right? But I just had to really take a step back and recognize that Lafayette is a microcosm of America, and America's attention span is literally snap-worthy or shorter than. So as a result, I was doing all of this. I was putting my efforts into all these demonstrations and initiatives. I was putting my voice out there. I was forcing myself to make my voice heard, right? But all for what? And I really think that that is the true essence of what social justice is. Social justice is literally trying to force someone to care about something that they do not have to care about at all. You're literally asking somebody who does not fall within a demographic that could be discriminated against, systematically oppressed. What is it? Marginalized. You're asking them to care. And they have the capability to simply say no and ignore you. Now, what you do after that, that is the true essence of what it means to live in a country like America, is recognizing that people can disregard your humanity, but still recognizing that you're human within yourself. So when we come back from this music break, because that's what these shows is low-key starting to turn into, me rapping a couple of songs and I'm right back. I'm going to discuss allyship as well as utilizing privilege the right way, because we as a collective, I feel, at least on the Lafayette College campus, and I'm starting to see it around the country, I'm getting a little hyped up on this whole allyship thing. So when we come back, that will be the topic of discussion. This is Time and a Half with Brother Charles. Keep rocking with me.
Come on, let me down.
Time and a Half with Brother Charles. This is WJRH 104.9 FM Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. I'm job blown because my live just cut off. The devil tried it, but the Lord saw me through. All right, we back. This is the social justice episode once again. So I'm back talking about this weird obsession that people have with allyship in regard to social justice. So for those of you who are not aware, allyship is basically when a hegemonic demographic, so white, male, Christian, anybody who falls within those demographics helps or assists someone who falls within a marginalized community or demographic with whatever goal or plight they have within social justice. So, for example, a white man or a white woman fighting for Black Lives Matter, or a straight individual fighting alongside LGBTQ, or something along those lines. Allyship, I would say, is somewhat necessary, right? Because in certain spaces, white people can only convince white people of certain things. Straight like that. I've literally lived this. Last year, there was a demonstration in Farrenon. For those of you who are familiar with Farrenon Student Center, there's an atrium, right? There's a lower Farrenon, which is a dining hall, and there's upper Farrenon. For whatever reason, Farrenon last year was more popular than it is this year in regards to lunchtime, right? So a bunch of us went in to lower Farrenon, dressed in all black, did a dine-in in lower. People kind of caught wind of that, so a lot of people either ate upstairs or ate in a different dining hall. So at a point, I noticed that we were all kind of somewhat alone in lower, so we came into the atrium. And while we were in the atrium, people started doing, like, spoken word. People just started crying. It just got real heavy. And then we started humming, I think, not We Shall Overcome, Lean On Me, right? So as we're singing that, I'm looking up and around, and I'm noticing people are like snickering and just taking this as if it's a joke. So I think this video is still on Facebook too, which is crazy. For like 5 to 6 minutes, I just stand in the center of the circle and just get to rapping about everything that was going on in the country, how I was like screaming at the top of my lungs, can I exist? Is that too much to ask for? Just yelling, just mad. All my frustration that had built up over the years of just being an oppressed black man just boiled over to me spazzing for like 5 minutes. Afterwards, people applaud, all this other stuff. And I'm just like, yo, that felt terrible. And the fact that I had to do that was disheartening in itself. But what was even more crushing was I know that there is, if some white people could just like literally talk to their homies about how some of the ways that they've been thinking and the way that they benefited from this system that has been orchestrated to beat me down since my birth, if somebody could just have that conversation, literally that would be more helpful than me screaming at the top of my lungs. That would be somebody being an ally. And what's crazy is a lot of people who call themselves allies don't recognize the power in that. They literally just want to pop out for the appearance of the fact that they're helping. Like, they want to hold the signs at the protest. They want to be in the pictures on the front page of the newspaper. But when it comes to having conversations at the dinner table when their uncle is making the same racist joke for the third year in a row at Thanksgiving, nobody wants to say anything. Or when you see your mother like clutch her purse when a black dude enters the elevator, instead of talking to her about why she has that implicit bias, you just want to hold up a sign and shout Black Lives Matter. But you know that there's so many people around you who don't believe that, and you don't have the gall to actually have that conversation. That's what a true ally is. A true ally is somebody who goes to bat for those marginalized communities without necessarily having the opportunity to receive accolades or a high five, a handshake, or a hug simply because they decided to be a good human today. I think that's the worst type. I think a ally who is just simply looking for an accolade is as worse as an enemy, because you're not really helping me. You're not genuine. And I feel like this obsession with having allies without really recognizing that most of these people are just doing it because they think protesting is fun or cool is just just as much of a detriment to the plight of social justice, especially within the Black community, or within any marginalized community, really. But speaking specifically from my experience, white people who call themselves allies but don't really want to check their privilege at the door or want to overshadow our struggle by talking about how hard it is to be an ally, like, you're not really helping anything. So just go ahead, back. Let us keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully one day we'll get to where we need to be. It's very frustrating because there's so many things stacked up against us as a people, and the worst thing that we need is for somebody to come in on a white savior complex on this magic rug of privilege and gumdrops, lollipops, and rainbows, thinking that if they just take over, everything's gonna be fine. That's not how it works. But social justice has no one answer. Social justice has no one strategy. There are so many different elements to it, and it's not something that's going to be solved overnight. Centuries of a system cannot be broken within a couple weeks of holding up signs and chanting. So there has to be so many different elements, policies, laws, and just cultural shifts in order for real progress to be seen. But that's all right, because one thing that we always going to have is music. And that's why a time and a half, I put in overtime to give you all that good music and that good talk. So we're going to take another break, give you that crank. Next up is Love's In Need of Love Today by Mr. Stevie Wonder. Shout out to him. Me personally, I don't believe that Stevie blind, but that's a whole nother conversation. Like, it's no way cuz really been playing that good for all them years and not been looking at the keys. That's just how I feel. But we still rocking. It's time and a half with Brother Charles, 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. Steady rocking, never stopping.
Good morning, evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love in need of love today. Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hey, go on round, waking many
Ooh, oh, hey, hey. Time enough. Have we, brother Joe? Social justice episode. We right back. Time is winding down, so I'll keep this last point pretty brief and just end it on a more positive note. My mama said I need to start making sure that the mic is out the way of the camera if I'm on live, because it'd be blocking my face. And my dude's low key be holding it down, so I'm not even tripping. I've been cranking this whole time and nobody told me. What's crazy is liberalism in regards to social justice, right? Especially white liberalism, and there is a difference. Most people don't really recognize the fact that sometimes if you don't really recognize what you're trying to accomplish when it comes to the plight of social justice, things can go astray. Basically, what I'm saying is social justice in regards to the communities that are marginalized, social justice in regards to the individuals who are really fighting for their rights, that's why it's so painful for individuals. That's why it's so taxing on individuals. That's why me as an activist, that's why like my whole year has been shaped differently in comparison to last year, simply because it is exhausting, right? But the people who don't recognize that, and the people who are trying to be allies, the people who are trying to kind of come up the rear, but then also kind of stand in the forefront of it, without really recognizing the detriment and the weight that comes from being discriminated against, those are the individuals who don't really understand. And I don't really, at the same time, I do kind of blame I do kind of blame them, because at a point you have to recognize that it's not our job to educate y'all. It's not our job to always keep you upfront when it comes to your own ignorance. At a point, people have to start taking responsibility for their ignorance. And within liberalism, you think that just because you might find yourself on the right side of history in regards to, I don't know, voting for President Obama, or having liberal views or certain things like that, or voting for universal health care and things along those lines that benefit everybody, that doesn't mean that you don't have implicit bias. That doesn't mean that you have your own prejudices. That does not mean that simply because you might find yourself in this liberal cloud or this ambiguous borderland of not necessarily awareness, but just because you might think that you're doing the right thing for society doesn't necessarily mean that you are exempt from recognizing your own privilege. And I think that misguided liberalism is literally intertwined with everything that I just said. I feel like the real problem within this country and as a society is we really think that certain things, we act surprised at certain things that literally have been interwoven with how we are as a society. Like, we really still expect our president to act presidential. Bruh, stop. Stop that. He's not a good dude. Stop expecting him to automatically become one overnight. He's not a good dude. People be like, this is what he should have said. I can't believe I'm so taken aback. Like, bruh, how many times a snake gotta bite you before you gotta recognize that it's a snake? To be honest, how many times? Like when another brother gets shot by the police, like, I can't believe this keeps happening. What? That doesn't even make sense as a sentence. I can't believe that this keeps happening. If it keeps happening, bro, believe it. But do what you can in order to change it. Stop being so flabbergasted when America, which was born on the graves of Native Americans and the backs of Africans, acts racist or discriminatory against a race. That's literally how our country was made, y'all. I just don't understand when people literally say, oh, this is just, I can't believe that this is still happening in 2017. As if we took a break from being a bad society at any point in time. Black people technically haven't even really been free per se since like 1973, if we keep it in the stack. That's why social justice is so important, because it's an ongoing battle. And people are like, what are you talking about? Like, black people got free in like 1863. 1865. Actually, no, that's why we celebrate Juneteenth. Y'all need to start looking at history. It was months after the actual emancipation. It was years after, 2 years after, actually, that the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, that slaves were actually free, because the Civil War didn't end until 2 years later. So then when the Union pulled up and was like, all right, y'all can actually go, they was like, all right, hold on. They give me like 2 more months, because some plantation owners in Texas actually were like, all right, let us get one more harvest and then they can go. And then as a result, they're like, all right, we're going to let y'all go, but like, y'all don't have no education. So we're going to give y'all 2 pennies, call y'all sharecroppers, basically keep y'all in debt to us and make sure that y'all can't go anywhere. So you're basically still enslaved to us. And then we're not going to let y'all vote for like a couple hundred years. And then even in 2017, we're going to have voter suppressing laws. So even black people can't vote to this day. We gonna mass incarcerate y'all and still make money off of y'all because of how many products are actually made in prison. Y'all actually need to look that up. We gonna mass incarcerate y'all, keep y'all locked up in a different form of slavery. We gonna make all these laws that prohibit your progression. We gonna redline y'all out of these neighborhoods, thus prohibiting y'all from actually creating wealth for your families and creating this cycle of poverty that only some of you are going to escape. As a result, we're going to also implement these European standards of beauty and make your black women not even really appreciate the way that you look. And then as a result, we're going to also pin against this whole concept of light skin versus dark skin. So after all that, right, centuries later, we have a misperception of our own standards of beauty. We have this generational, we have inherited generations of poverty. We have inherited generations of trauma, as well as mental and physical abuse. We have internalized some of our own discrimination. So as a result, we combat each other along the way. And you have the nerve to think that social justice within just a couple months or a couple weeks, You want to comfort us for not being as progressive as some of the other races who haven't had to battle this. And you have to recognize, and people are always like, well, why don't y'all just pull up yourselves like by your bootstraps, like the Irish and the Jewish, and my grandfather came over here in this year and that year. But you have to also understand that a lot of Jewish people, Irish people weren't necessarily seen as white a couple centuries ago, and because of this country was so anti-black, they were able to basically maneuver their way into whiteness, right, and capitalize off the fact that this country was so anti-black. And as a result, black people were left on the wayside, still fighting for basic human rights such as like voting, or you know, like being able to see a doctor. I could go on like this forever, but my time is almost up, man. I need more than an hour. But I'm going to leave y'all on a pretty good note. Black people can continue to do our thing. Black culture is the culture. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. All this music, all this crank, all the good vibes that the country literally soaks up and exploits is courtesy of brothers and sisters. Shout out to black women. Y'all are queens. And we all come from y'all. So we need to show y'all even more respect than you already deserve. This is Time and a Half with Brother Charles. I kind of went over my time today just rapping about the same things that just bother me. This is just how my mind works, y'all. I'm going to leave y'all on a good note, though. Let's see. I got so many options. I really be making too much music on this on these playlists because I really don't even know what I'm about to talk about. But at the end of the day, y'all, I just do my thing. This is my platform, and I'm going to keep talking how I want to talk, saying what I want to say, because it's necessary for people to hear the truth at the end of the day. This is Time and a Half with Brother Charles, and this is Deacon Uncle Brother. I appreciate y'all for always rocking with me. And I'm going to end it on a high note. Fly girl, get him. BJ the Chicago Kid, this brother's on his way. Appreciate y'all for rocking with me as always.
I love black women. I'm black.
You know, I dig the natural. I think the natural is a beautiful, beautiful way of wearing your hair for all black people.
When I get up in the morning, I'm natural.
I know it's
and that's the way my hair is.
I'm sorry.